Power 98.7 podcast.
All right, it is 10 minutes after 7 on the Power Life. In our Power Life exclusive feature tonight, we are in conversation with a business power couple who are at the top of their game in the business sector. They share how they recovered from loss and pain. Now, we often think that it's all good and well in the life of people who have made it in life and who've come far. But tonight we become a fly on the wall in the home of our exclusive feature, the couple who have gone through everything you can imagine, from having dealt with infidelity, family suicide, loss of children due to estrangement, and also a number of experiences that may bring some kind of enlightenment in your own life, in the path and the journey that you're walking currently. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the platform Chris and Suzanne Stiles, who have had to pull themselves through very tough circumstances. They are sought after public speakers, they're trainers, facilitators, business owners, award-winning and best-selling authors. But ultimately, at the heart of it all, they are all about developing people and building businesses.
That's right.
Dumelang, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for inviting us onto your show.
Thank you so much for being here tonight. So how are you feeling? I mean, are you aware there's a sandstorm happening outside?
I think we've been living one for such a long time. We're just getting to see it instead of just visualizing it in the mind.
I actually had quite a laugh when you introduced us. And thinking about a sandstorm, the first thing that comes to the mind is movies like The Mummy.
Right.
Well, what happened in our life was like George Clooney's The Perfect Storm times 5.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear all about that journey. I mean, we just having the brief conversation that we did outside, it seems to me like there are quite a few things that I could learn from the both of you. You've come a long way, certainly. And for those of you who have just tuned in and are wondering what I'm talking about with the sandstorm, I've never seen anything like it. I didn't know what it was until everyone in the newsroom said there's a sandstorm outside. We all went out onto the balcony. But if you can help it, just try stay at home. Don't drive. If you can absolutely help it, it's really not looking good outside. But without further ado, now, let's get to know who you are first and foremost, because you have come a long way. Suzanne, ladies first. So in a nutshell, what are the two of you all about?
Well, gosh, what a way to put it. What we are really about is developing people and helping them withdraw from within what it is that they really want to do, what their passions are, and to give them some insight on the mistakes not to make. We can only grow if we make mistakes because that's where the learning is. So if we can share some of the ones that we have made and experienced in a practical way so that other people can learn from that, the mistakes that they will make as they go along in life will perhaps not be as heartbreaking and as absolutely financially devastating in some ways. And what we're about is just really sharing whatever it is that we can in terms of knowledge and growth.
And what would you say has been the biggest mistake that you have personally made to date?
Wow, the biggest mistake. Well, I think it's the best mistake I've ever made.
I love that.
It's not the and it certainly was a big one. Having grown up in a very unconventional childhood, becoming the mother to my half-brother before my 8th birthday and bringing him up, I grew up very much a have-to girl. I had to make things work. I had to do things to get things to work, to eat and things like that. So I've always been quite a big picture thinker. And after having developed grown a huge business in a very male-dominated industry, in the out-of-home industry, specializing at airports, and selling it for a lot of money and always being entrepreneurial, never having a single entrepreneurial failure, Chris and I had a whopper. It cost us absolutely everything we had financially, emotionally. It cost us family members, friends. And it was a huge mistake in terms of the financial damage, more than 7.5 million rand. With about 1 million still outstanding to people.
Yeah.
But it was the best mistake I ever made. It just made me realize that for probably since the age of 8, I had been living my life for somebody else.
Wow.
Never, ever living my life for me as a woman. We take on huge responsibilities as women as we go along in life. You know, we're always told that we're the nurturers and we're the carers and the loving ones, and you just forget about yourself. So I think the biggest mistake I ever made was to never put myself first.
Hmm. Now let's go back to go forward. Where did it all begin for you?
Goodness, is that in life-wise or couple-wise?
In life, right at the beginning, because you had your own life before you met Suzanne.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Well, born and raised in Springs. And from there, I went to the University of Natal, where I did a BSc in Zoology and Botany, straight on to Honours, straight on to Masters, and straight into a PhD. And literally two-thirds of the way through my PhD, I realized that I was qualifying myself in something that I enjoyed but was not massively wildly passionate about. And also, I couldn't see myself making a good deal of money from it. So I actually, the capitalist awoke in me literally two-thirds of the way through a PhD, which is a heck of a moment of realization, a moment of truth. And what that did is that caused me to move from the discipline that I was in, which was an applied ecological research scientist. In other words, I was working with human, wildlife, elephant conflict, et cetera, and game reserves and how to integrate people around natural resource management. Fantastic. Living out in the bush, having a fantastic time. I moved into the world of financial services. So it was literally, if you will, from one zoo to another. And the reason I was taken into the world of financial services was at that stage, one of South Africa's leading retail banks were looking for people who approached life differently. And what they were looking for were a certain DNA that they could then mold into new leaders. So we went on an accelerated leadership development program. And for a year, we were taught absolutely everything that the bank could teach us and then placed into positions. And my retail bank career spanned a decade. Within about 5 or 6 years of having stepped into the corporate world, after having been told initially by leading headhunters in this country that I was unemployable because who in the corporate world would want an elephant research biologist? I then worked my way up to a general manager of sales and service, which was a very senior role, exco level position. And I was there for 4 years until finally I realized that as much as I'd enjoyed my stint in the corporate world, I wanted more. I wanted to own my own business and businesses. And given the work that I'd been doing in the banking sector, I had become massively interested in small businesses, especially the fact that so many small businesses fail. In fact, it's a horrific statistic. It's around 80% every single year, year on year, of 80% of small businesses will fail. And this is a statistic that might vary slightly, but it's generally around that margin. And I was fascinated with this. I thought, how can it be? There must be ways to turn it around. And so I stepped into business for myself, together with Suzanne. I'd always been involved in leadership development, in fast-tracking and accelerating talented individuals within the banking sector that I worked in. And so we just naturally gravitated to that, looking at how you develop leadership potential around small businesses. And that's why what we do, as you see on the website, is develop people, build businesses, and deliver results, because it was taking our passions. And when we got together, we trained locally, we trained internationally, we spent a great deal of money on learning from the best in the industry and learning as much as we could from them. And then we decided, in a very bold move, to bring one of the world's great teachers on the mind and money, a gentleman by the name of Bob Proctor, to South Africa. Well, needless to say, not only were we a little bit early, but everything that you could imagine went pear-shaped. Wow. Even though we bet the farm on it and threw every single thing that we could resource-wise, it just never got off the ground. And that was the reason for our spectacular, if you will, financial failure. Now, as you can well imagine, Master Chaba, we are both in our 40s. I had held down an exco level general manager position. In other words, you're earning really good money. You have a very, very comfortable lifestyle. Suzanne had created a very successful woman-only media company and sold it off and still had managing rights and controlling rights at that stage. And she was living a massively comfortable life. And our entire world just imploded. And you asked, where did it all begin and where are you now?
Right.
The fascinating thing, and I refer back to the book that I have an absolute love affair with, which is Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich.
Mm.
And I would absolutely advocate every person listening to the show to read it, because it is a seminal work on how to create success during extremely difficult circumstances. And what he said is that every single adversity brings with it the equivalent seed of opportunity. Now, how powerful is that? And when our world collapsed, Suzanne and I were forced into a moment of truth. We either were going to go back into the worlds we knew, media, banking, and there were jobs for us to go to, or we were going to guts it out. We were going to somehow manage to keep going in the face of utter destruction. And that's what we decided to do. And I'm so glad we did that, because the one thing that it has taught us, and massively profound lessons, is how do you as a small business owner create something from nothing? Because when your business has disintegrated around your ears, when you are at the point where you actually don't have any money to plow into your business, because that money is there to keep your cell phone going and to buy food, how do you build a business when you have literally no money?
Mm.
And isn't this set of circumstances so true for so many people out there, especially in Africa?
Right.
Not only South Africa, I'm talking across the entire continent now. And this is where we had to go. Is we had to find extremely innovative ways. Was it hard? Yes. Was it brutal? Yes. Were there days that I felt that my head was going to explode off my shoulders in a spectacular meteor shower? Yes. But the thing is, there is nothing more creative than the mind which is made up. And when you are not prepared to go backwards, when you're not prepared to use your escape clause, and when you are only prepared to go forward and to find ways to do it, the innovation that erupts within inside of you is massive. You suddenly find ways to be able to keep your business going through barter arrangements.
Mm.
You trade with people. I will do this for you if you will do that for me. There's no exchange of money because there is no money.
Right.
But you find the most ingenious ways. And I am so grateful for this very extreme journey, as Suzanne said, because it's given us the opportunity to be real.
And I'd like to expand on some of those innovative ways that you managed to keep going in spite of all the destruction that was happening around you. Now, Suzanne, your own personal story was at some point quite destructive before you met your husband. Tell me a little bit about everything that you went through as a woman. Particularly, you mentioned that there was a sugar daddy at some point in the situation.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you don't realize it at the time, why you are doing certain things, why you behave in a certain way. My upbringing was so bizarre, really, that I just had a mom that was completely irresponsible. She loved smoking, drinking, partying. She just wasn't good at the mom thing. And having a little baby foisted on you when you're 8, and one day sort of realizing when you go to the fridge that it's empty, I actually found out last year where my thoughts around money lay. And my thoughts around money lay was the fact that I wasn't worth any. And when I went back through an exercise at a training that we were taking part in, I actually realized that when I was 8, I once asked my mum for some money. We were living in England at the time. So I could go and buy some toast and some beans to make my brother and I beans on toast.
Yes.
And she was on her way out and she told me we didn't deserve any money.
Hmm.
You don't deserve any money. It was such a profound, had such a profound impact on me that as I grew up, that was my understanding about money. So I was always very good at making it. I wasn't any good at keeping it. Didn't spend it on myself. Wasn't a spendthrift. Didn't shop till I dropped. For myself. But wow. I did do it for other people.
Yeah.
Give them money, help them out, loans, build businesses, things like that. But what I actually realized, I needed to get away from my mom. We came to South Africa when I was 15. I came for 6 months. My mom had emigrated with my stepfather. And I was coming out for 6 months because I was going to join the Women's Royal Air Force. I'd grown up as an Air Force baby, been around Air Force bases most of my life, and that's what I thought I wanted to do. Came to South Africa and suddenly found space and blue skies and lovely people and nature and just so many things that I'd never experienced before in my life.
How old were you when you came to 15. South Africa?
Yeah. I mean, South Africa's my home. I consider myself South African. I've got travel on a South African passport.
Sure.
You know, use the English one for to save some visa fees, but literally that's the only reason. Support the Springboks, support Bafana Bafana.
So you're loyal to this country.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, my dad used to say, my real dad used to say to me, when are you coming home? And I said, Dad, you don't understand. I am home. This is where we are. But what I found was I needed to get away from my mother. So I did what every sensible 17-year-old girl does. You find Prince Charming, you get pregnant, you get married because you think that this is the way your life should run.
Yes.
And found myself in my 20s divorced with three children, no money, no education because I didn't finish school.
Mm.
And how was
you,
I?
You left before matric.
I left before matric. Yeah. I just had to get away from my mum.
Yeah.
And the first way I could do it was by dropping out of school and getting a job, which I did. And then I found the boy, got pregnant, got married in that order. And then, of course, as in most cases, you end up getting divorced because you've made all the silliest decisions in the world. And through an opportunity of just friends introducing me to people to try and get me into different industries, I found my way into the advertising industry and had a long-term relationship with my boss. And he was 20 years older than me. And in hindsight, I absolutely know that I was attracted to him for the safety, the age.
Yeah.
It was safe that he was married, for a start.
Mm.
I mean, you don't realize that at the time, but you're not going to get hurt easily. You kind of know what the ground rules are.
Right. You know where your place is.
You know where your place is. You know that you're going to be cared for. You know that you're going to do certain things. You're going to be... It's like being an on-standby girlfriend.
Right.
You know, your life is not your own, but it's the price you pay.
Yes.
In life, you pay a price for everything.
Yeah.
So you've decided the price that you're paying, and that's what you did.
Mm.
And he was a wonderful man to me.
Mm.
And through an incredibly difficult time in my life, not only was he a great person and loved and looked after me, but he actually taught me everything he knew about my industry that I was in. And he just taught me and shared everything, which gave me such a leg up and opportunity to eventually grow my own business in the advertising industry as well. So, you know, you only kind of realize 10 years after the fact, I actually knew it. I did it consciously, you know, because you always say, oh, it wasn't me. I didn't know it was wrong. You do know.
You know
it's wrong.
But you were also, you were a smart sugar nana. They call them sugar nanas.
Is that what they
That's what they call them. And I purely say this not because I advocate for any of that situation, but purely because so many women find themselves there for economic reasons, but walk away with nothing.
Yeah.
And you walked away with tons of knowledge.
I did.
So power
Absolutely.
To you.
Thank you. And you know, it was an absolute case where, you know, when it all hit the fan and it was all common knowledge, I took it on the chin as well.
Yeah.
I didn't run away. I didn't absolve myself from responsibility. You know, I stood my ground and said, yes, you're right. I'm also wrong here.
Yeah.
And it's a big lesson too. And you're quite correct, you know, to say you don't advocate it, but it does happen.
It happens.
And when women find themselves in difficult positions, you have children. I had three children at the time.
Mm.
You have to survive.
Yeah.
You have to look after your kids.
Yes. Well, we're going to take a short break. I'm in conversation with Chris and Suzanne Styles, that is. And when we come back, we're going to find out what were some, I'm sure you're wondering, what were the challenges of dating your boss? But when was enough enough? And how did these two meet? And what on earth kept them going in spite of all the challenges that they faced at the worst point of their business careers? We'll be back.
Call Power Life with Master Chaba Lekalake on 0861-987-000.
Welcome back. It is 32 minutes after 7. I'm in conversation with power couple Chris and Suzanne Stiles. And we're taking a walk down memory lane, but also just wondering what it is that kept these two going in the midst of horrendous storms. It happens to everyone, and learning through their trials and tribulations. And the lines are open. You can call in on 0861-987-000. So, Suzanne, at what point did you decide that you couldn't do this anymore? You were dating your boss, who was 20 years your senior. And when was enough enough for you?
Actually, enough enough for me was when you realize, you suddenly realize how much you're hurting yourself as well as hurting other people. And it is a selfish realization, because when you realize the damage you're doing to yourself, you get an understanding for that you of the damage that you're doing to other people. So it was really after 7 years, there was a time coming within the business units that we were all working in where big decisions were being made, companies were being sold off, choices had to be taken, and there was an opportunity for him to make the big choice to come and live with me and for us to go on our own, and it was too hard for him. Although we had been in a relationship, he had children, he had grandchildren, he had a separate life outside of my life, of the relationship that we had, and it just became a decision that we both had to make. And you know, and that's when the hard bit comes, because especially as the other woman, you have to realize that there's a massive establishment around. Especially an older man, a sugar daddy, as they call him, because he's got he's first of all been around a lot longer than you.
Yes.
So he's been established a lot longer than you. And that's a system that you've got to go head to head with. And there's massive pulls there. You know, children, older children, grandchildren. And that was when we realized that it was just going to have to end.
Okay. How long were you with him for?
7 years.
Sure. Wow.
Long time.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Indeed. So tell me how the two of you met.
Oh, this is full disclosure. I was at one of the country's leading retail banks.
Yes.
And we decided to do an airport campaign around credit cards, which was the division that I was working in. And we rented real estate, if you will, airside, from Suzanne's company. So I was her client. And given that I was her client, they invited us out to a couple of events. And the relationship that I was in at the time fizzled. And, well, one thing led to another, and we were introduced to each other. And there was just it wasn't fireworks. But it was a very, very, very powerful chemistry.
I understand that.
And
so it's not always love at first sight. It doesn't smack you upside the head all the time.
First time. Well, not at all. And I think, you know, given the fact that we're absolutely playing all in tonight and wearing our hearts on our sleeves.
Yeah.
Thank goodness neither of us had any idea of what we were going to have to face, because we got married in 2010. And within 4 years, the amount that extreme experiences that we've had to deal with, I know that I recently submitted them through to our PR person, and it was something like about 19 train smash events. Never mind just infidelity and losing a business. It was so much more, and just as well we couldn't see into the future. But what held us together was the fact that we both had made a decision that we were going to make it. And not make it individually, but make it together. Mm. And once you've made a decision, that decision needs to be also backed up by certain actions. Now, one of the most powerful things that we ever learned about was something called a goal card. Not a goal, a goal card. And that is a card on which your goal, which is a really massive goal, it's a dream with a date attached to it, around which you have massive emotional connectivity and association, is carried with you at all times.
So this date that we speak of would be the date on which you should have hit
absolutely
your target.
Absolutely. Quite right. And you actually made mention of how did you keep going. Well, if I may make use of a boxing analogy, because that's what comes to the mind, is you step into the ring and the next moment you get hit so hard that it feels like you've been hit by Mike Tyson with a brick inside of his glove. You have a cosmic experience. That's how many stars you see. And at that moment, what floods into your mind? Fear, worry, and doubt. So as you're trying to get up off the canvas, what on earth do you go for? You go for your goal card. And what I'm actually going to do is I'm actually going to reach into my pocket here.
Yeah.
And so you can actually see, there it is.
That's your goal card.
That is my goal
what
card.
What does that say?
It's laminated. Well, yeah. It's actually very, very, very private.
Oh, okay.
So I'm rather not going to read it on air because it is a very personal goal.
Sure.
But what you do is, as you are completely and utterly unraveling, you pull out your goal card and you read it. And you wait for that emotional connection to be reestablished with it. And then you get up off the canvas. And lo and behold, you now get hit with a sack with bricks inside of it. And as you look down on the canvas, all that you can see is teeth. And at that moment, what floods into your head? Worry, doubt, fear, anxiety. And what you do again is you reach into your pocket and you pull out your goal card. Now, the reason I'm placing such emphasis on this is if we did not have a very, very clear goal, and if this goal did not have instilled in it so much emotion from us that there is nothing that we will not do in order to achieve this goal. In other words, this goal has become a burning obsession. Master Chaba, there is no way we would have been able to keep going. It was so intense. Yeah, understand, when you've had a life where you have had a disposable income, and what I mean by that is a monthly income, which is after tax, which is way north of 150,000 Rand. And you suddenly go to the point where on a regular basis, when you look at your bank account, you have less than 200 Rand inside of it.
I know we've all been there.
that is so terrifying, yeah. That if you do not have something which you are so powerfully connected to and committed to, you will not last the distance. And this, for me, has been one of the massive realizations around why so many small businesses fail. Is because the people that are in business, when the times get tough, they do not have enough of a connection with that business to do whatever it takes to get that business out of the thick stuff and the mud and onto dry land. They don't have it because there is not that emotional connection. And we can sit here about business and we can talk about logic and all of that for hours at end. I tell you, when it comes down to raw guts, to grit, it goes around persistence. And again, I come back to what Napoleon Hill talks about in Think and Grow Rich, where he says there may be no heroic connotation to the word persistence, but it is to success what carbon is to steel. Need I say more?
All right, let's go to Owen Nkomo from Inkunzi Investment. Power Man, good evening.
Hello, Ms. Chawa, how are you?
I'm very well, and how are you?
I'm stormed out, man. Jeez.
I know, right? I know. We're all just trying to survive the storm. Here's a couple who's done that literally. Yes, sir.
They have, man. And you know what? You know what the odd thing is, Ms. Chawa, is driving. I've been on the phone and I've been talking to some people. And then obviously when I finish the call, I tune into Power FM as always. And then I hear you, a gentleman, talking there about how he found himself in a position where the escape clause route did not exist anymore.
Yes.
I mean, that is so profound. And I believe that most successful business people out there was probably that's the frame of mind that they put themselves in to make themselves succeed. You know, there is no option B. This thing, I know, I believe in it. It's a good idea. It will work one way or another. And I just wanted to agree with a gentleman there that, you know, you put yourself in a position where you're like a lion that is in a corner and, you know, can only do one thing just to find a way out. And you always do that. And if you're an entrepreneur and you get to that tough position where he's just been talking about it again, where he says you're not too close enough to your business to be able to do the necessary things that that you need to do to make sure your business succeeds. If you are in that position, you need to engage that gear and tell yourself and the people that are around you that there is no other option.
Yes.
This has to work, and you must engineer your every sense to believe that that is going to be the truth.
Wow. Owen, thank you so much for that contribution. Power to you. And this is a man who knows what he's talking about. I mean, that's our power business economist who has walked his own journey.
Wow. Well, Owen, if I may respond to that, thank you so much. And one of the most brutal lessons I have learnt is that when everything is burning around your ears, the voices of everybody on the outside become so loud. The naysayers appear from everywhere, and they are telling you what you have done wrong, and they are rubbing your nose in it. And it's literally as if everywhere you turn, you see people gloating. And I use that word without hesitation at the failure that you're experiencing. And if there's one message that I have to get out there tonight, it is that when the passion and the purpose and the power and the determination and the will to win is louder and hotter on the inside of you than all the voices are on the outside, that is when you will win.
Mm, that's powerful. Now, you've overcome your own set of personal challenges in your life, Chris, and one of which was, you mentioned, losing a child or children.
Yes. Gosh, it is a very, very, very difficult topic to talk about. My two beautiful daughters live in New Zealand, and about 5 years ago, their mother approached me asking me if she could take them to New Zealand. She'd remarried, and I agreed to this, and they left for New Zealand. And well, once they'd landed there, there were a few acrimonious incidents. And the next moment I received a letter from a Barberton-based attorney informing me that my children wished to formally disown me.
Wow. Wait. How old were your children?
Well, my children at the time were, oh, goodness me, probably about 13 and 9. And it was absolutely devastating. I don't profess to have been the perfect dad. I really don't. I don't think you find a perfect dad. I think one of the things that the world needs is a lot more forgiveness. The world needs a lot more tolerance. The world needs a lot more love. Just look around you. At the moment, just look at the amount of hatred, look at the anger, look at the resentment. It just makes no sense. People are just clawing their way over other people, just smashing them as if they don't exist. And it was very, very, very difficult for me, and I had to come to terms with it. I haven't heard from them for 5 years, and they still make it known to me whenever I do try and make contact with them, albeit through newspapers, whatever it is, because what does a desperate dad do?
Yeah.
You know, if you can't even get hold of your kids, you send them a birthday message via the local newspaper in the town in New Zealand that they live in, and they still make it very clear that they have no desire to interact with me. Now, does it hurt? Yes, it rips your heart out, and it is an incredibly painful thing. But then you move beyond the biological ties. Sure, this is actually quite tough.
I know it's hard.
You move beyond the biological ties, and you begin to see the beauty in people around you. And I had two biological daughters exit my life. If you see how many children I have now, I have children all over South Africa. Mm. I have young people across this country who write to me on a daily basis, and I help them as best I can and through mentoring them. Suzanne and I go into Cosmo City, and we fill the local city center there with 300, 400 young people, and we teach our hearts out to them for the day. We travel to Bloemfontein. We do the same thing. And yes, there is pain, but there is also incredible gain.
Yeah.
And you have to acknowledge the pain, but you look beyond it and you say, well, when the time is right, they will want to know me. However, when they make that decision, at least let them see a man who is doing phenomenal things.
Mm.
And then they can make up their own mind.
Hmm. And of course, we have many fathers who tune into the Power Life regularly. What mistakes do you think they can learn from that you may have made as a dad?
Just love your kids, and also let them make their mistakes. It's part and parcel of growing up, and teach them as best you can. But if they make their mistakes, allow them to make their mistakes, and then once they've made them, don't judge them. Rather, just look for the learnings inside of them, both for you and for them, and see how those learnings can make both of you better people and more positive contributors to society. If you allow the red mist of anger to surface in your mind, your relationship with that person is over because you're coming from it with the wrong energy. Yes, we will all make lots of mistakes, but the thing is, show me a person who hasn't made mistakes and I'll show you a person who doesn't exist.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the most important thing is forgiveness, and just understand that we are all walking our own journey, and in many instances we don't know what it's like to spend 5 minutes in the other person's shoes. Mm-hmm. So just try and be a little bit more understanding and try and show a little bit more love and compassion. It'll go a long way.
Mm. Now, let's speak about love and compassion, because it takes a hell of a lot of that to make a marriage work, especially in the face of financial career troubles. How did you strike that balance with your husband, Suzanne?
Well, it's actually quite incredible, because when we first got to know each other, we often used to have Skype chats during the day when Chris was still in the corporate world. And I always remember him writing one specific chat to me, which I'd actually downloaded and saved, where he said, you know, I want to have extreme experiences.
Wow.
And I just don't think he realized how true that was going to be. And I think one of the hardest things about starting the marriage was that I had divorced early, then had a couple of long-term relationships, never remarried. Chris had divorced, married again, and when we got together, we kind of realized that, like every couple in your 40s, you have got so much baggage.
Mm.
You are bringing so much from your past,
yeah,
and so much from paradigms, the way you were brought up with your parents. I mean, I grew up thinking it was okay. It was, well, not that it was okay, but I grew up thinking it was normal that a woman had husbands and boyfriends at the same time, because my mum was a bit of a party girl.
Of course.
And when Chris and I got together, the one thing that I found very difficult was to believe that he would stay and go the distance.
Yeah.
Because I'd had to do everything for myself since I was little.
Mm.
And a very difficult thing for Chris was that if things weren't going right, and especially in my eyes, he's quite a handsome man, it made him feel better if he chatted to ladies via texting.
Yeah. Other ladies?
Oh, yeah.
Did you cheat on your wife?
Oh, yeah. I did.
So.
And how did you find out?
oh, well, you know, us girls, we always know.
Oh, we it always
just,
know.
We just always know. And just, I never, ever in any relationship I've been in since cell phones have been around, I think it's 20 years this year, I have never, ever picked up a partner's cell phone, ever, and looked through it. I was getting ready to go to a rugby match. I'm a big rugby fan, and yeah. I was going with my business partners. I was still in my advertising business. I was getting ready for a rugby match, and his phone beeped, and I don't know why, but I looked.
It's instinct.
And you just, I just, and
yeah, it's instinct.
He never ever hit his phone. I never looked, and it happened. And what we did was we sat down and we decided to work on not the what, but the why. Why did you do it? First of all, you know, the typical question, yeah, is it me? Do you still love me? Because, you know, I'm still a girl.
Of course. Of course.
But we had made this commitment to want to make it work and to understand past mistakes. So that was what we did. We sat down and we looked at the behavior. And why do you do it? Because the thing is what you do is always fueled by why you do it.
Yes, absolutely.
It's got nothing to do with the what, is just the outcome.
Consequence of.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and it's the same if somebody's an alcoholic or if they're a drug addict or all kinds of things, a food addict, a shopaholic, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
And that's the thing. So
why did he do it?
It just made him low self-esteem.
Yeah.
And it
so it's true. They say that men don't cheat because of us. They cheat because of how they feel about themselves.
Yes.
Well, if I may answer that.
Yes.
Absolutely. Low self-esteem, being under incredibly difficult circumstances where you feel pressure coming from all sides and you don't quite know how to cope. You're doing the very best you can. The voices inside your head take over. And especially if you have issues of low self-esteem, they just swim up in your mind like enormous crocodiles.
Yeah.
And you turn to that because it is the equivalent of a dopamine fix.
Mm.
It gives you that instant high, which alleviates the pain and the distress that you're feeling.
Yeah.
And is it right? No, not at all. Does it happen? Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
And one of the most profound lessons for me around that was you will pick up all of these books on self-help. And aren't there just thousands of them? And finally, somewhere, especially if the person is worth their salt, who wrote the book or who is actually teaching the material, they will actually say that all the answers lie within. And that was where I did not want to go.
Mm.
I wanted to look for all the answers and all the solutions outside myself, much like a lot of these seminar junkies do, where they just go from one success guru to the next, to the next, to the next seminar, because they will not look inside of themselves for the answers. And it is because inside you lie all the perfect answers, but those are answers that, when they surface, are so enormously painful that they completely and utterly shatter your world.
Mm.
And the realization and awareness and awakening that goes with that is also so enormous that if you aren't committed to the journey, you will rather shut down what is inside of you and keep on looking outside of you. And that's not where you're going to find the answers.
Mm.
Everything that you need lies inside you. The thing is, going inside requires more courage than what you can ever imagine.
Mm.
And that is why so many people, sad to say, begin these journeys of self-discovery only to quit. Because when they go inside, it is so difficult. The going inside is 1,000 times, if not 1,000,000 times, more brutal than trying to find something outside of you.
Absolutely.
But if you are prepared to go through those cauldrons of fire and discover who you truly are. And I'm happy to say I have now discovered who I am and connected with myself.
Oh, that is so clear. Because yes, there's work. You can sit here and be so honest.
Well, yes, there is work. There's always work to be done. But the thing is, because I now understand who I am on the inside, and do you know, Masachaba, nobody could teach me that.
Yes.
I had to go and find that out for myself. Because of that, I can now be a better husband, a better father, a better mentor, a better coach, if you will, around building businesses. I would not have been able to do that had I not gone through that pain.
And let me ask you, Suzanne, before we take our final caller for this conversation, very briefly, infidelity is one of the hardest things to overcome in a marriage, if not the hardest. How did you overcome it? Because you're the one that had to get over it. Chris had to forgive himself. But how are you able to trust him again?
You know, initially it was incredibly hard because we're all just human. And especially when you've had failed relationships in the past. But I think really for me, the choice, it was a choice around what do I really want? Who do I want to share my life with? And if that's what I want, then, and when I made my decision that I did want Chris to be my husband, we had goals, we had dreams, we've got huge, huge goals and dreams. It was a case of sitting down and working on myself because I didn't need to work on him. I can't fix him.
Mm.
I can only fix myself.
Mm.
And I realized that one of the greatest understandings was obviously because I'd been the other woman, I suddenly knew how the wife felt.
Yeah.
So that was my lesson too.
Yeah.
Because we all have to learn. There's always a price to pay.
Yes.
But really what I had to do was to learn about me and to understand. And the hardest thing though is when in those darkest moments when everything is falling around you, even though I'm an incredibly even-tempered woman, was to, when it's hot, not throw it in his face.
Mm.
And that was the hardest thing for me. And I did slip up a couple of times.
I'm sure. And you're forgiven.
Yeah. But that was the hardest thing. But we made the decision because when we realized what the behavior was, and because I had already been on a journey, we'd been training with international peoples, had a better understanding of our own paradigms and why we felt the way we did, you kind of realize that, you know, clean slate.
This is what you want.
And this is what I want.
As Nhlanhla Zwane always says, you made a decision to stay.
Yes.
That's admirable. But let's go to Kofi in Braamfontein for a very quick comment. Good evening, Kofi.
Yes, listen, it's going to be very quick. Again, Master Chaba, what a powerful story for a couple that's so genuine, frank, and very open to even put everything out like that. I really, really applaud them.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to get there. If you can get us their contact, it will be beautiful.
Yes.
But this is a powerful talk.
Yes.
And please send them my regard, and I bless them all the way.
Thank you. They're listening. Thank you so much, Kofi. So how do people find you? What are you working on? How do they connect with you? I know people want more. Twitter is going ablaze.
What we're working on specifically at the moment is something called By Invitation Only. We're focusing a lot on women right now. We work with couples. We work with everybody. But we're focusing on women now because by invitation only is how life works. Life happens for you, not to you. And we rebranded ourselves a few months ago because we would go everywhere as Chris and Suzanne Styles. Then we'd tell them what our company was called and they'd all go, why?
Yeah.
So we are actually branded and known. Our business is Chris and Suzanne Styles. Our website, chrisandsuzannestyles.co.za.
Yeah.
So it's actually nice and easy, and you can find us on Twitter as at chrisstyleza and at suzannestyleza. And we're just really passionate about growing people to be more understanding and kinder to themselves first, then they'll be kinder to other people.
Wonderful. Chris, thank you so much for bringing yourself.
Power 98.7 Podcast.